A tough pill to swallow.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. It's bad enough that people lost billions because financial companies made awful decisions. But some people were flat out defrauded by someone they trusted. That someone is Bernard Madoff, the former chairman of NASDAQ. His arrest last week for running a Ponzi scheme has opened a Pandora's box of stories. A charity in Boston fired its whole staff because their money was invested with Madoff. New Jersey Senator Frank Lautenberg entrusted his family's foundation to this man. And today in Europe, there was more fallout. Well-respected banks came forward and admitted they were duped. Our European correspondent Stephen Beard has more.
Britain's Royal Bank of Scotland, Santander in Spain, and the French bank BNP Paribas are now on the list of potential victims. They or their clients stand to lose more than $4 billion. One of the world's biggest banks, HSBC, is another possible casualty to the tune of $1 billion. Many British-based hedge funds have also been affected. One of London's best-known money managers, Nicola Horlick, had 9% of her fund invested with Madoff. Speaking to the BBC, Horlick attacked the US regulators.
It's very difficult for people to invest in things that are meant to be regulated in America because they have fallen down on the job. And, you know, this is all through the credit crunch that this has been apparent. And this is the biggest scandal probably in the history of the markets.
She claims that the Securities and Exchange Commission investigated Madoff twice in recent years and gave his firm a clean bill of health. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Besides the Madoff story, Wall Street is watching two other things very closely. One is the auto bailout. Will the president step in and get it done? And two, the Fed. Will the Fed lower interest rates again tomorrow? So far, the Dow is up 23 points to 8652. The NASDAQ is down a couple. The S&P 500 is up 2 points. The European markets are about 1% higher so far. There were solid gains in Asia by the close. The Nikkei added 5%. One of the key questions in the auto industry is this: who will break through with the latest and best electric car technology? Believe it or not, a small bet on China wouldn't be a bad idea. Today, China unveiled the first electric car made by a Chinese company. It's called the F3DM, and it'll sell for about $22,000. Our man Scott Tong was at the unveiling. Scott, tell me about the car.
Well, the car doesn't look spectacular around the outside, I have to tell you. They unveiled it, and it looks like a Corolla, but the magic is on the inside. This car has a plug-in battery that is said to be 2 years ahead of the competition because it's on the mass market here, and it's superior to what the Japanese and to what GM are developing right now. It goes longer, farther per charge, and it charges up faster than the competition.
Okay, so where can I get one?
You can come join me in China. That would be the quickest way. Or you can move to Scandinavia, which is where they're going to export some of them next year. Or if you hang around this Chinese company called BYD, it wants to export them within a couple of years to these larger markets like North America or Europe.
Scott, what evidence do we have that this really will be a mass market seller?
We have $230 million of evidence in the form of investment from Warren Buffett. So that's good enough for most of us. Earlier this year, he decided to invest this much money, and what it seems like is he believes this company is on the cutting edge of this battery technology. And what's interesting about this Chinese company, BYD, is it started out as a battery company, making mobile phone rechargeable batteries or making laptop rechargeable batteries. And some executives have actually come out and said, you know, making a mobile phone is really hard. Making a car is easier.
Marketplace's Scott Tong, reporting from Hong Kong. Thanks.
Okay, Scott. Thanks a lot.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, December 15th on Marketplace.org. The Pew Charitable Trusts launched a new website this morning. It's called Subsidy Scope. And what it does, strangely enough, is track public subsidies. Nancy Marshall Genzer explains.
Subsidy Scope will tell you how much the government forks out for food stamps, but it'll also list how much Washington spends on corporate tax breaks. John Morton directs the project. He says it'll put the government's $700 billion bailout package under a microscope.
Obviously, the $700 billion is a number that people understand and have heard, but it doesn't really represent the true cost of the bailout.
For example, Subsidy Scope will track the cost of federally guaranteed loans gone bad. Gary Bass heads OMB Watch, a nonprofit watchdog. He plans to use the free site to calculate the price tag over time of all government bailout plans.
The cost of all these bailouts could get as high as $7 trillion. So it makes enormous sense to see whether or not we're getting our dollars worth for this.
The site will post its first batch of data in late winter or early spring. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
If the Federal Reserve does lower interest rates tomorrow, it's probably going to be a 0.5% cut. That means the Fed's key rate would only be 0.5%. There isn't much left to cut. And that could have huge implications for the value of the dollar. Here's Ashley Milne-Tite.
The usual result of a cut would be to see the dollar weaken further against the euro, and that tends to drive investors toward the safe haven of gold. Dennis Gartman publishes the Gartman Letter, a daily commentary on the markets.
Traditionally, given the circumstances that prevail, the weakness in stock prices, a propensity on the part of the Federal Reserve Bank to err upon the side of easing, all those things would tend to push gold prices upward.
As for other precious metals, Gartman says a falling dollar won't do much to push up their prices.
Platinum and palladium move because they are used as catalytic converters, and the number of automobiles being sold are lower and likely to continue to be lower.
He says silver has industrial as well as decorative uses, but the industrial ones have shrunk during the down economy. So if investors want to bet on a precious metal, he says, it's gold that's still likeliest to glitter. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
Now, what if interest rates do go to zero? What then? Quantitative easing, that's what. Time for another installment of the Marketplace Decoder. To explain quantitative easing, I need to bring back Stephen Beard from our European desk in London.
This is the last monetary wrench in the Fed's toolbox, the nuclear option. Economist Andrew Hilton says quantitative easing is what you do to get people borrowing and spending after everything else has failed.
What it is an attempt by central banks to pump liquidity into the system, even when interest rates are close to zero.
Lowering short-term interest rates is usually the way to increase money supply, but when central banks can't cut rates any further, they can turn to quantitative easing. They can print a lot more money and spend billions buying long-term government bonds. That floods the economy with extra cash, and it pushes long-term interest rates lower.
That will bring down borrowing costs for mortgages and corporate loans.
Graham Turner is with GFC Economics.
You're trying to do this to stop people defaulting. We absolutely need to move towards this kind of policy.
But some economists, like Andrew Hilton, are distinctly uneasy about quantitative easing.
We are now up to our knees in liquidity, up to our knees in cash. This kind of shift of policy will mean that we're up to our waists in cash. And who knows what's going to happen 2 or 3 years down the line. It is perfectly possible that we could have double-digit inflation.
Too much cash chasing too few goods, pushing up prices. The textbook definition of inflation. But supporters of quantitative easing say deflation, falling prices leading to mass bankruptcies and unemployment. That's the real danger.
Let's get out of the hole we're in before we worry about the next hole along the road.
Former British central banker Charles Goodhart says since rock-bottom interest rates have failed to spur spending in the States and the UK, the case for quantitative easing will soon be overwhelming.
It's not normal, it's not standard, but if you've got yourself into the kind of financial and economic crisis that our countries have, it is actually what you have to do.
But critics say there's no guarantee that quantitative easing will work. It still may not solve the fundamental problem, the lack of trust and therefore lending between banks. And as the recession deepens and the banks grow more fearful of default, trust seems as elusive as ever. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Last week, the Brookings Institution held a panel discussion on the issue of confidence in the economy. This is part of a series designed to give President-elect Obama feedback as he takes office. The panel's moderator was our very own Alan Sloan from Fortune magazine.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Good morning, Alan. What did you take away from that discussion?
Well, what I learned from the panel was that there are actually two kinds of confidence. One is somehow we, as a country, have to convince the foreigners who have been lending to us for years and are now going to be asked to lend a few trillion more to keep lending to us. And the other thing is some sort of confidence that the people in Washington are capable of leading us out of this problem. And if you're a person from Mars looking at this, you say, there's no one in charge, and that's a bad thing.
Yeah, well, if you're a person in Topeka, Kansas, you're thinking the same thing probably.
And I'm even from the East Coast, in the former capital of finance, New York, the capital of world finance, as we now know, is Washington. I've been around for 40 years covering this stuff, and I've seen a whole batch of crises. And there was generally a sense that there was someone who could bring it to an end. And now there's nobody in Washington that I can think of who can restore the confidence that used to reside in these institutions.
What's one thing you think would help restore confidence right now?
Candor would be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Where either the guys leaving or preferably the guys coming in would say, hey, look, we've got real problems here and they're going to get worse before they get better. Here's what we're going to do to try to get out of this. We're going to share the pain. We're not going to keep doing the thing we've been doing, which is we bail out the companies and the companies then fire thousands of employees. This is a joint enterprise and we have to do this together.
Alan Sloan from Fortune magazine. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Feel free to share your opinion with us online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Monday.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.